Slice of Sci-Fi number 750. 750 episodes. That's a hell of a milestone. Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And I am Liz Carley.
And today we are doing some Doctor Who follow-up geeking, as promised. Always late, but never, well, almost never missing it.
Never a dollar short. Maybe late, but not a dollar short.
Yes, we try not to miss the boat entirely, but yes. This is your Doctor Who Season 9 recap, including the season and the Christmas special, and any other little goodies and tidbits people might have tripped across during their Doctor Whovian jaunts through the wood. How's that?
Through time and space, you mean?
That's the wood. I'm sorry, you know.
Dung 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 dung.
So it's only fair that we warn all of you. This will very likely be spoiler filled from beginning to end. So if you don't like Doctor Who spoilers, or you haven't completed your binge watch of season 9 yet, or you just in general don't want to be spoiled, now's the time to hit stop and come back later.
Yes.
Full disclosure, there will be spoilers here. So no yelling at me in email. Oh my God, I hadn't seen this yet. Yes, you had the chance, because Doctor Who is one of those shows that's released globally at the same time. If you haven't watched it by now, not our fault.
So, Summer, just as a bit of a curiosity, have you been getting a lot of emails from people angry that you spoil things?
Not a lot, but every now and then the ones who are going, oh my God, are very vocal about it. And I'm like, you know, I said, spoilers, hello.
So we're warning you now, if you don't want to know, run screaming from your computer, possibly bury it under a rock.
Yes, that'd be, exactly.
Yes. You know, if you have your Twitter filters set to not show you anything Doctor Who related until you've caught up, good for you. However,
so Kylo Ren really is the master.
I knew it.
No. The Star Wars talk is later.
Oh, that's right. Sorry about that.
Yes,
we got all timey-wimey there.
Yes, you've got your franchises crossed.
Yes, it happens.
Untwist those wires, set them back where they should be.
All right.
So,
well,
we're not going to talk about how the Doctor had to deal with the Tribble problem?
No.
Oh, no. Man. Okay.
It was no Tribble at all for him to sort that out, though.
Oh,
dear. Oh, God. Oh, Tim. No. If you were within reach, I would be slapping you with the trout of contrition.
The pun.
Which is why I'm over here.
The puns, they burn.
Yes, they do. All right, well, I'll start this off, and I'll make a very audacious statement here. I truly believe this year of Doctor Who is the best year we've gotten of the since it was reincarnated back in 2005.
Really?
Wow.
Not all the episodes are great, but overall, they're solid. They're much more science fiction-y, which appeals to me. Peter Capaldi is my favorite Doctor. And this year, amongst all other years, Clara Oswald as a companion really comes into her own.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so at that point, do we let the spoilers begin? Well, let me, here's why Capaldi is my favorite of all doctors. Partly, and this is purely personal, he is a gentleman of my own vintage, shall we say. You know, the doctors over the last three or four incarnations have gotten progressively younger. And while, you know, I thought Matt Smith brought a certain manic fun to the proceedings, you know, he was clearly a different demographic. Add to that that the stories that the 11th Doctor mostly dealt with, they tended to be more frenetic, and there was a sense that the pacing of them was going to go so fast that it would zoom you right past the plot holes.
Yeah, okay. And if you whip past them fast enough, you don't see them. I get it.
Right, exactly. And
I can concede that point.
Yep. You know, and then some of the convolutions as we got into, you know, the whole story of River Song and her origin and all that, and it kind of becomes, in a sense, nonsensical. Fun, but not really making a whole lot of sense. With Capaldi, and especially in this year, the stories are tighter. They are more focused, and even one of the things I think that Moffat has tried to do with various degrees of success at his tenure of showrunner is to really embrace the notion of how malleable time is, even the notion of the fixed points in time that the Doctor and various incarnations keep bringing up. Those, especially with Capaldi, those really feel more like I'm going to tell you that they're fixed points because I really don't want to deal with the consequences. And a number of the stories this year deal with the consequences. They introduce a character that's played by Maisie Williams of Game of Thrones fame. It's a two-parter. The first part is called The Girl Who Died. The second part is The Woman Who Lived. And in The Girl Who Died, the Doctor and Clara find themselves in a Viking village. And this village, which has no real warriors, they've all been killed by this alien race that's bent on invasion. The Doctor basically tells them all, run. You don't have a chance. And they're all like, no, but we're Vikings. We're going to stand fast for what we believe in. And of course, the Doctor being the Doctor can't help but help them. And so they defeat the aliens with the help of some sleight of hand and getting a hold of one of the helmets of the warriors and using that as sort of a psychic amplifier for Maisie Williams' character, a young girl named Ashielder. And what's interesting about it is, of course, they defeat the aliens, but there's a price to be paid in that Ashielder dies. Her brain's basically overloaded. Well, Clara won't let that be enough, and the Doctor has got basically a little bit of nanotech from the aliens that he uses to basically resurrect Ashielder. And it turns out it makes her immortal. Ooh. And she moves forward through time the slow way and doesn't necessarily become a nemesis of the Doctor's, but as she tells him, I'm going to look out for all the people that you leave behind. And wow. at the very end of the season, the Doctor, who has faced off again with the Time Lords and Gallifrey, he is literally at the literal end of the universe. The stars are winking out and she's there waiting for him.
Oh my God.
Right, exactly. So, and as he revives her way back when, as the young Viking girl, he tells Clara, he uses the analogy of dropping a pebble into a pond and the little ripples. And he says, sometimes you make bigger ripples, and this is going to be one of those. And that's the thing about Capaldi's doctor, is he'll do what needs to be done in the moment, but he's fully aware that he may be setting himself up for a bigger problem. And that happens. It's just the plotting overall this year has been better. Those kinds of consequences come back in big ways. And the way that they're handled makes sense. You know, it isn't all of a sudden, oh, well, the doctor's shrunk down and he's in this robot body and that's how he really marries River Song, la, 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 and he gets away. It's, you know, at the very end of the whole thing, he's trying to save Clara from death. And to do so, actually, let's backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
Clara, through this season, tries to become more and more like the Doctor. Since the death of Danny Pink, she's become, it's not quite a death wish, but she's just like, what have I got to lose? And the Doctor is a little worried about this. And sure enough, one of Clara's students shows up with a tattoo on the back of the neck that is ticking away. So clearly he's got some sort of something terminal is going to happen to him. Turns out a shielder has this diagonally kind of place that's in the interstices of awareness in London where aliens can come and be safe. Well, she's basically struck a deal with somebody to keep this secret, but she has to deliver the doctor to them. And this was the hook to get the doctor interested. This kid's got this thing that's ticking down. Well, unbeknownst to the doctor, Clara comes along and says to the kid, hey, give me this thing. And he's like, what are you going to do? She's like, this is what the doctor does all the time. He takes this thing on himself and he figures out a way around it. He'll figure a way around this. So Clara gets the thing and there's no way around it. She's going to die. In the meantime, it turns out it's the Time Lords who've struck this deal with a shielder to keep this little colony of aliens on Earth secret. He ends up in what was apparently his confession dial. Didn't know what the confession dial is. From here begins basically Doctor Who's take on the Prisoner. The Doctor is locked in this castle.
Whoa.
With something chasing him, and it's after a confession from him. And much like Number Six, he's not giving in. And in this episode, he at one point jumps out a window into the lakes from this infinite ocean surrounding this castle and finds a layer of skulls. And he looks up at the sky and the position of the stars are all wrong. And it must have been 7,000 years since he's entered this thing. Well, it turns out he's locked himself in the cycle of getting teleported in. His pattern, Star Trek-like, is locked in this teleporter. He figures out that this thing is trying to get him to confess to something. He finally finds this barrier of a diamond-like substance and starts punching away at it, and then the thing nearly kills him. He drags himself up to the teleport location, activates it, and the next pattern, it comes to existence. This goes on for, no joke, a billion years. All the skulls are his as he's been dying.
Wow. Oh, my God.
It's just... And that's, again, back to the science fiction aspect. This becomes this, it's almost like this Stephen Baxter level perspective of time. And he finally breaks through, and it breaks through and finds himself back on Gallifrey. You know, and when he finds himself basically in this desert, this little boy runs up and he says to him, go to the silly city, tell them I'm back, and I've come the long way round. And then comes the face off with the Time Lords. And this is great because he goes back to the little shack from the Day of the Doctors.
Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
And so they send a gunship out to collect him. And the doctor basically looks out the door at the gunship and goes back inside. And then it's like the general of the Time Lord army calling for the doctor. And he looks, peeks out the door, and just he's got this look. And Capaldi plays it perfectly. This utter disdain. Doesn't even have to say a word. Goes back in. And finally, it's Rassilon, and he finally talks to Rassilon. And Rassilon's trying to get the soldiers to basically gun the doctor down where he stands. And of course, the doctor, you know, he's, again, not a word at all through all of this. And the soldiers basically join the doctor. And that goes back to when they were fighting for Gallifrey against the Daleks in the Time War, that he was the only one of the Time Lords that stood by them. You know, and that you, this was a great encapsulation of why the doctor, how he stands for people who can't stand for themselves.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, it's powerful. It's powerful the way that Capaldi plays this whole thing. And this whole thing is basically to go and snatch Clara from her timeline where she dies. And then she proceeds to dress him down and say, "You don't get it. I knew what I was getting into, and this is what I wanted to do." And it becomes an almost an examination of what happens when the companions become like the doctor. It just works on so many levels. And so the doctor tries to pull a Donna Noble on Clara to send her back to Earth with her memory erased. And Clara has jiggered the device, so it's a 50-50 chance that it'll either work on her or work on the doctor, okay?
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
Well, this episode opens up with the doctor going into a diner in the middle of Nevada. He and his Gibson SG cherry finish, it's a beautiful guitar, goes into this diner, and there's Clara Oswald as the girl behind the counter. And he starts telling her this story about this companion. And then you get to the end of it, and you realize that it's the doctor who's forgotten Clara, and not the other way around.
Oh, my God.
It is just, it's crazy.
Now, is that the same guitar? I mean, he's had that guitar a couple of times during this season, right?
Yeah, you start off with the Yamaha Samurai at the beginning of the year, and this is a classic Gibson SG with a Bigsby vibrato on it. It's a gorgeous guitar. I love it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's and that's not even talking about the Zygon invasion, the Zygon inversion episode, where the Zygons from a couple years ago who have basically taken on human form to hide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A group of them decide they're tired of hiding. And they start basically an insurrection, which threatens the peace of the world. And it's as much a discussion. It was very, very timely in that, if I remember right, the ISIS terror attacks in Paris happened right about the time these episodes aired.
Oh, my God.
And the doctor delivers this monologue. He's got Kate Lethbridge-Stewart and the Osgood Zygon back in a room again. And they've got these two boxes, which is like, you know, whoever blinks will destroy the world, basically. And he delivers this impassioned speech about what it means to be violent and what do you gain when you are violent. And he says the only way to stop it is to show mercy to everyone. And it's just, I can't, you've got to go look it up. You've got to watch the episode. It's amazing. And the passion that Capaldi brings to that is incredible.
Just listening to it gives me goosebumps.
And it's like I said, the timeliness of it was amazing, because it was, that was, you know, the other part of what was going on is that the Zygons, the rebel Zygons, if you will, were going to set off a device that would reveal all the Zygons who were hidden. And of course, at that point, you know, there are naturally Zygons who just want to assimilate. They just want to live their lives. And you follow one briefly in the episode where he's been revealed and the humans are attacking him because he's a Zygon. And he's just like, I just want to live.
Oh.
You know, it's the kind of thing that science fiction does well.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
So that, what would you call the overall theme of the entire season arc? Not counting Christmas.
Yeah, because that's a different thing. You know, I the overall theme is partly, I think the overall theme is that you have to do the things that are necessary in the moment, but you also have to do it with the recognition that nothing stands isolated from itself. You know, it even the season starts off with the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar, where not only do we bring back Missy, the female incarnation of the Master,
mm-hmm.
we also find ourselves on Skarrow with a dying Davros. And it actually starts off with this young boy in the middle of a jumbled war battlefield. And these weird, they call them hand mines, these hands that come up out of the ground.
Yeah, this episode I actually did see. And yeah, that was one of the creepiest things I've ever seen.
Yes. Right. Well, it turns out the little boy is Davros. So the doctor is trying to save the boy, realizes he could be saving one of the greatest evil masterminds to ever terrorize all of time and space. And how do you get around that?
Hmm.
And he does. He does ultimately save the young boy. Because part of what that is that he shows mercy. And that translates out to the Dalek, who says mercy, which turns out to be Clara in a Dalek casing that Missy has put her into in an attempt to get into the Dalek stronghold to save the Doctor. But Missy being Missy can't just leave it at that. She tries to get the Doctor to blow up the Dalek. And he doesn't know it's Clara in there until it starts going, mercy, mercy. But how would they say mercy? Because that's not how they were programmed, except that the Doctor had gone back to show mercy to a very young Davros.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, that notion that the actions you take have ramifications across time and space, that really is the overall theme for this season.
Tense, man.
Yeah. Yeah, there's even in the episode, The Woman Who Lived, which was the second one with the Shielder, who now we're in the 1600s, and, you know, she's been alive for, you know, 500 years or whatever, you know, as a young Viking maid, and she is angry at the Doctor because he just sort of left her here, didn't take her along as a companion. And an alien, basically, you know, you figure this part out fairly early on. This alien has come along to promise her, I'll take you with me to see the universe. You've just got to steal this particular jewel, which is the MacGuffin that opens up the portal to get us out of there. And, of course, you know, it's really a prelude to invasion. But throughout the episode, the Doctor is trying to get her to recognize that she's still human, that she still has feelings as much as she's tried to shut this all off. You know, and they touch on the things that she's seen. She's, you know, buried three children during the Black Plague. You know, realized that she could never really have lovers or husbands or whatever because they grow old and die and she doesn't. So she's kind of shut that part off. But it's there's a great scene where, of course, the alien portal's open and they're starting to, you know, fire laser bolts through it, and everybody's screaming, and she's going, "Oh my God, what do we do? What do we do?" She goes, and then she goes, "Oh my God, I actually care." And the doctor looks at her and goes, "I know, right? It's horrible."
Oh my God.
And, and that's kind of the whole moment, is that he's been trying to get her to understand this is sort of the burden that he carries. You want to run away from it because, you know, everything ends. But when it happens, you still step up. You know, and of course they work together, they defeat the aliens. But again, that's, you know, that's not really the important part of the essence of the episode.
I'd say it's still pretty darn important here in the Doctor. Like that.
Well, right, exactly. It's about the character, and again, that's the thing about the Doctor that's carried him forward for 50 plus years. You know, even with the hiatus, it isn't necessarily the story; it's what the character represents.
Yeah, that's true. I totally agree with that.
Wow. So, like you said, your estimation, this is probably the best season of Doctor Who in terms of story and pacing and
character and theme and production values. It's looked solid all throughout. You know, even when you're looking at like the Viking scenes, which would be relatively inexpensive to put together, you know. You could whip up a quick Viking village. It didn't look cheap. And just powerful. I mean, really, really great stuff.
Yeah.
Anything that leaves you speechless, man, that's got to be good.
Yeah.
How about amused as well? The purported medieval axe battle.
Yeah, the Doctor rolls in on a tank with his, you know, playing guitar at loud volumes.
In a medieval British English village, he's apparently been battling this one champion, shall we say? And he keeps defeating him with oddball stuff.
Yes, that just about killed me. I just like, yes, that's my Doctor. That's that little piece of 11 that I know and love.
Well, but he's also doing that because he's running away from the inevitable.
Yeah, but and still, that's, and guitar that's the battle thing. In the medieval times, man.
Right, yeah.
Now, how many people recognize that he was playing part of the Doctor Who theme on the guitar?
Me.
I don't remember if I recognized that at the time or not.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, what is he playing? And then because it started out as just regular riffs, and then it went into the... I'm like, nah. And then I checked the comments. The comments on YouTube, they're like, yeah, that's him. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, and it really is Capaldi playing guitar.
Yes, he is an old school British rocker.
Yep. Now,
well,
some people,
I just grew a lot more respect for him.
Some people have complained about the lack of sonic screwdriver in this season.
Oh, come on, man. He had a Gibson.
Well, he also had sonic sunglasses.
What?
Which, okay. As cheesy as it sounds, it actually works better. Ultimately, you know, because he put them on, they were basically, you know, cheap sunglasses. And, you know, you press the one of the earpieces and you get that wee 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 sound. But it makes better sense, you know, to when you're looking at things, when you're analyzing things, than holding this magic wand in your hand and kind of looking at the green light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sonic sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I liked Capaldi before, but now I love Capaldi, and I liked 12 before, but now I love 12. This is like hitting all my sweet spots.
So are the Sonic sunglasses here to stay?
No, they reach an inglorious end at the end of the series, and he does get a new Sonic screwdriver in the very last episode.
Okay.
Yeah, another Sonic screwdriver to collect.
Yep. Wait, you have a collection of different Sonic screwdrivers?
I am slowly building one, yes. I have 10s, I have 11s, I have rivers, and I think the only ones I don't have so far are 3s and the make-your-own Sonic screwdriver.
Right.
But it's also very funny. One of my dearest friends... her boyfriend, every Valentine's Day, he doesn't get her flowers, he doesn't get her candy, he gets her a new Sonic screwdriver. That's love.
That is love.
That is
Ain't that romantical?
That's geek love right there.
That absolutely is geek love.
Okay, so we know how some people feel about River Song. So what is your, give us a synopsis of the Christmas episode. What was it, it was called The Husbands of River Song?
The Husbands of River Song.
Okay.
The doctor finds himself on a planet that is celebrating, it's a human colony in the year 5,300 or something. And, they're celebrating Christmas, and this kind of nebbish of a man knocks on the doctor's door of the TARDIS and says, I'm looking for the surgeon. The doctor says, close enough, and he takes the doctor to this flying saucer, and out steps River Song, who, when the doctor says, River! She says, I don't know who you are, but that's Dr. Song to you.
Wow.
And, she leads him into the spaceship where she introduces him to her husband. I can't remember the guy's name. Hydroflax is his name. King Hydroflax is basically a head on a cybernetic body, basically a battle bot body.
Mm-hmm.
Big stompy thing with whatever. And what really turns out is River Song had married this guy because he was going to be able to lead her to a very rare diamond. And in the process of obtaining the diamond, something exploded, and the shard of this diamond had embedded itself in his skull. And so basically she's been looking for a surgeon to remove the head so that she can then get the diamond and then sell it off somewhere. So we're clearly somewhere early in her timeline, maybe. But she doesn't really recognize the doctor until a good 2/3 of the episode through, as she's basically bringing him along. She gets into the TARDIS because she has a key. As he begins to recognize that she doesn't recognize him, you know, he kind of drops little hints to see if she'll pick it up, you know, and she's more like, wow, you're a fast learner kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of her other husbands was this guy named Ramon, who was helping her to obtain the diamond. Of course, she's basically using him. Meanwhile, the battle bot is collecting heads to take the place of, you know, Hydroflax's missing head, and it tracks them down, and they're on a starliner full of basically the most heinous criminals you could ever imagine. You have to have murdered planets of millions of innocents in order to even get a ticket onto this voyage, kind of thing. Yeah. So, and of course, River Song is meeting the buyer, who turns out to be someone who worships King Hydroflax, who then finds out that the head is in the bag that she's been carrying that has the diamond. And then it's about, you know, and at that point, the ship steward, who's a very smarmy alien creature, tells the battle suit that, you know, if you hold on to River Song, the Doctor can't be far behind. And then she delivers the speech. She's like, no, you don't understand. Oh, I love the Doctor. There's no question. But he doesn't love me. He doesn't even know I exist, kind of thing. Again, this is where Capaldi really shines. He, as she's saying this, he's looking at her with the eyes of a man in love.
Aww.
Until she finishes the speech and she realizes how he's looking at her. And he just goes, hello, sweetie.
Oh, God.
And I have to tell you, going into this, I was really not, I mean, I love Alex Kingston, I love River Song, but I don't like how her character ended up at the end of the 11th Doctor's run with all the weird convolutions they did with that character. So I'm kind of, you know, going into this going, yeah, okay, I could see they're bringing her back because she's popular, but, you know, it's like, do they really have something of substance here? Well, they really do. You know,
wow.
It was snappy. The dialogue was fast. It was snappy. It was a well-paced sort of a caper kind of thing. But again, that moment when she realizes who he is, you know, at one point she's like going, you know, I know he's got a lot of faces, and she's got the grandma flip photo wallet thing. And it's got its photos of all the doctors up to the 11th.
Oh, my God.
You know, and there's Capaldi's doctor kind of, you know, 12 looking, you know, okay, well, I don't see my picture kind of thing, you know. And it became something more, because then at that point they realized, okay, now we know who we are. Now you know who I am, and it's time to make our escape. And they do so in classic Doctor Who fashion. But it was beautiful. It was very nice. It was very romantic. And the romance between the two of them, as short as it is, makes more sense. It feels more natural.
Well, that's – speaking as a person who adores River Song and who actually really enjoys most of the whole affair with the Doctor, that's really heartening for me to hear.
Yeah, it was really nice, and whether we see her again or not, I don't know. The other thing that they've done is I think they've really, Moffat and company have kind of decided to sort of sidestep that whole notion of going backwards through each other's timelines. You know, while the Mater D guy snatched River Song's diary. And he's kind of leafing through it and goes, oh, Jim the Fish. Everybody knows Jim the Fish. She's worried about her diary because there are fewer pages left in it. And she just knows that means the end is coming soon kind of thing.
Aww.
You know, and that's part of what's in there. And this is the episode where River gets her sonic screwdriver.
Oh, my God. See, geek love. He loves her, so he gave her his sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good. It's not the best of the Christmas specials, but it was a good one. I enjoyed it quite a lot. I enjoyed it more than I expected to.
That's awesome.
So, all right. Where is Clara at the end of the season?
Well, let's see. Clara and a shielder. Okay. At the end of the episode where you finally realize that the doctor doesn't remember Clara, and it's kind of like, oh, wow. Turns out that this diner that the doctor had wandered into is the TARDIS that the doctor had stolen earlier on in the episode to get away, because he didn't have his TARDIS. And so its chameleon circuit is set to be this Greasy Spoon Diner. And Clara and Ashielder are heading back to Gallifrey, but the long way round. So I'm very much looking for the big finish audio episodes of The Adventures of Clara and Ashielder.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, wow! Clara really did become like the Doctor!
Yes, right. Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was satisfying all the way around.
That is so perfect.
Yeah.
So we definitely are getting a new companion next year.
Yes.
Okay.
And when you say next year...
Next season.
Well, when you say that, because I was just reading today that two big items of news for Whovians everywhere. Number one, the only new Doctor Who we will get in 2016 will be the Christmas special.
Oh,
God.
The BBC says that the Olympics are happening and some, I don't know, Euro Games, which didn't mean anything to me because I'm an American.
America!
The BBC felt that that would steal the thunder away from Doctor Who. Take that for what that's worth. The other news, and I think much more important, is that Stephen Moffat has announced that he will step down as showrunner after season 10, which will air in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And Chris Chibnall, who has been showrunner for Broadchurch, will take over.
Ooh.
Yes. Chibnall is also a of that generation of Doctor Who fans who are now in a place to make Doctor Who, as opposed to write into the fan magazines.
Very interesting.
Yes.
So we only get a Christmas special in 2016.
Yep.
Before jumping into a full season.
Spring of 2017.
Huh.
Yeah. Take that for what that's worth.
Well, it gives them a little bit more time to plot out their machinations.
Yes. Some of the other interesting developments in all of this is that Capaldi has made hints that next year, next season, will be his last. Which makes sense. That's about the average tenure for an actor to play the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also, Moffat and company have also done good work setting up groundwork for the potential of having a woman play the role. I'm not saying that that's what they will do, and it's whoever it is, it's got to be the right person to play the Doctor. But not only has the Master regenerated into Missy in the final episode, which was titled Hell Bent, when the Doctor goes the long way round to Gallifrey. At one point, as he's trying to save Clara, pluck her out of her timeline to bring her forward to save her, he's looking at a general, I guess. I've forgotten the character's name, but has a weapon trained on him, and he says to the general, "How many have you got left?" And the general goes, "Like three." And the Doctor says, "Okay, I'm sorry," and shoots him, basically kills him. And of course, he regenerates. And when he's finished regenerating, he pops up and he's a woman. And he says, "Finally, back in this form again."
Oh my God.
So, you know, for all the people who have hooted and hollered and said, you know, we really ought to have a woman in the role by now, they've at least made set the groundwork so there is a precedent for it. I think that's kind of what has gone on with that. Yeah. I'm not saying that's what will happen when Capaldi steps down, but...
Well, I can also see it as maybe not so much laying the groundwork as testing the waters. Like, here, let's actually put this on screen and see how fans react to it. And then maybe not the upcoming Doctor, but maybe the Doctor after that, maybe we might end up with a woman.
That's a good analysis. I haven't gone to see what the fan reaction to that has been. The fan reaction to Missy has been almost uniformly positive.
Because she's wacky and evil and just and scheming and devious, and she revels in it.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, that episode, the second one, which is familiar, she and Clara, it looks like they've been blasted by the Daleks, but Missy, being the clever girl that she is, basically used their blaster energy to power a personal teleporter. And when Clara wakes up, she's hung upside down from a tree. And Missy's sharpening a sharp stick and taunting her with, you know, well, I don't know, do I eat you? Or, you know, and Clara doesn't give in. She basically is like, okay, yeah, I know who you are. I know what you're up to. And I'm not, you know, you can't scare me, basically. And Missy's like, okay, you know what? Maybe you have it. You could stand a chance, and cuts her down kind of thing. But, you know, part of the deal also is she, you know, she puts Clara into the Dalek casing. Gives her a good reason. We need someone to, you know, you know, the whole dress up like a stormtrooper to be a guard to get Chewie into the cell block kind of thing. But it isn't just that simple either. And she attempts to manipulate the Doctor into destroying a what's apparently a Dalek. Thinking that the Doctor won't figure out that there's Clara inside. Of course he does, and, you know, that's where she kind of, you know, has overextended her ability, if you will, but still. But she, I mean, she's amazing.
Cool.
A good foil to the Doctor, so.
So, everyone who has not seen the season yet, you have some tasty tidbits to go look forward to. I don't know how many people are following Titan Comics's Doctor Who comics, but not only have they, because they did the Ninth Doctor as a miniseries, and they've announced that they're doing the Ninth Doctor as an entire, as a complete line, like they are with 10 and 11.
Oh, wow.
And they will be... All right, is it 10 and 11? Capaldi's 12, right?
Correct.
Yes.
All right, so they are doing 10, 11, and 12. They jumped back to 9, did a miniseries. Now they're doing 9 as a full series, but they're also doing 4.
Oh!
They're doing a series of The Fourth Doctor. And as an old rock and roller, Tim, you might find this intriguing. They did a series of Doctor Who comic covers with different Doctors that were interpretations of famous album covers.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I might have to go check that out.
I'll have to dig up all the ones for you. I think they even did one for the Fourth Doctor. They've done albums from, I think, the 60s, the 70s, and I believe the 90s. And I'm trying to remember. I will have to see if I have all of the images, because some of them are really, really well done.
Yeah, I want to check that out. It actually reminds me of my favorite t-shirt. I'm a big fan of T-Fury. And a few years back, you know, I was checking out their daily special, and they had The Who's. And what it was you know, The Who-themed backdrop, you know, the target and everything. Four as Pete Townsend on the guitar, taking flying leaps, scarf trailing behind him. 11 on bass, shaped like a TARDIS. 9 on drums, and 11 in the roll of vent whistle. 9 on drums as Keith Moon, and the drums had Dalek bumps on them.
Sweet.
And 8 on vocals as Roger Daltrey singing into his sonic screwdriver. It was The Who's. I didn't even remember hitting the buy button, but I did. Because it hit all of my geeky kinks. It was a Who-themed t-shirt. It was a Doctor Who t-shirt. And my Doctor, 11th Doctor, was, you know, in the part of the bassist of John Entwistle, who is one of my bass gods. So, you know, like I blacked out when I came to. I bought the shirt. Came in the mail, made me so happy. I still have it. It's kind of threadbare at this point because I wear it constantly. But yeah, that kind of brought that to mind.
Now, see, that's something where, you know, with T-Fury, you know, you get one shot or you got nothing. You need to buy like 2 or 3 of those at a time. Yeah.
I need to start doing that.
Yeah. So I believe they have most of those album covers at their website, which should be titan-comics.com.
I'm actually looking at comicbookresources.com, a link to that, and it's three variants.
Oh, they have more, though. There's like,
oh, do they?
There's more than those three. There's three. There's one cover and three variants, but there's another couple of covers for later. And I forgot to mention this. They have also started a run of the Eighth Doctor.
Really?
That would be good.
So we have Fourth Doctor, Eighth Doctor, 9, 10, 11, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
That is awesome. It's freaking badass, man.
Yeah, I don't even remember the Eighth Doctor, but that's just because apparently he wasn't there very long.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was Fox, of all people, back in, what, 95?
Oh, that one-off movie.
It was the one-off movie that he was in, and then they brought him back briefly for a 10-minute short called The Night of the Doctor, which showed how he regenerated into the War Doctor.
Right.
But he's also, through Big Finish Productions, they've done a number of Eighth Doctor audio adventures.
And he's actually doing the voice of that, yes. Too. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I've heard a couple of those. They're good.
I need to talk to the Big Finish guys one of these days.
Yes.
Yes, this is a thing that must happen for reasons.
Okay. So we've covered the comics, we've covered the Christmas special, we've covered the season.
Yep.
I don't know if we had a new set of books come out yet. Out of the ones that came out last fall, or there's a group of, I think, four novels, maybe five, that came out. You read some of them.
I read one. I read Deep Time, which was a 12th Doctor adventure, which I enjoyed. No, I read two. I read that one, which I enjoyed very much. That was a very good space opera kind of story, which, for me, one of the tests for tie-ins for things like TV and movies is, if I'm reading it, can I hear the voices of the actors in the writing? And in that particular novel, very much so. And then I read a Fourth Doctor adventure, and it was so memorable that I can't remember the title of it. It was set in the 70s, and it was enjoyable, but
Was that the Drosden's Curse one?
That was the Drosden's Curse, yes. Thank you, Summer. It was all right, but the villain of it never really comes into focus much. And I kind of felt like I could just as easily see the 11th Doctor in that story. So at that point, you know, the character of the Doctor didn't come through like I would have wanted it to. And the setting it in the 70s, other than the fact that nobody had cell phones to be able to maybe call ahead to say, watch out, evil's on its way. The setting, the time period, didn't seem to really factor into it much either.
Hmm.
So, you know, it was enjoyable, but I think forgettable, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, did I manage to get you a copy of the Hooniverse book?
No.
Hooniverse is a coffee table compendium of everything Doctor Who-ish from the beginning of Who time. It's from Barron's Educational Services, of all people.
I love that an educational company is producing geek literature.
Yeah, And this wasn't the only geek literature book that they've done. This one, Hooniverse, is gorgeous. First of all, the cover is a gorgeous shade of blue and purple.
It really is.
And the pages are actually heavy magazine stock, and the pictures in them are gorgeous. There's an encyclopedic sort of listing of all of the planets that the doctor has visited. Just a stuff that I didn't even know could possibly exist. I'm like, who sat down and cataloged this and found all these pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah, from what little I've been able to look it over, it really does have an encyclopedic quality to me, and it's what I love about it. It's definitely a must-have reference book for the Doctor Who fan.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to the PR guys from Barron's and I have been playing email tag since before Christmas, and we were supposed to get a couple of copies to give away, and that hasn't happened yet. So I'm holding on that we can still do that. But
yes.
No, this is.
I'm sure with you, such pretty people.
It's a truly gorgeous book. If you have the means, it is so choice. I suggest you get a copy. Don't wait for us to give out a copy. I don't know if that's going to happen yet. But if you are a Who completist, you should search this one out. I'm not even sure that this hit regular bookstores, or if it would be in the... I don't even know where it would be if you went into a bookstore. But we will have links to Hooniverse, where you can buy them. Give
Yay.
Us a couple pennies. It's a gorgeous book. If you're a Who completist, a Who fanatic, or if you just, like me, enjoy sci-fi related reference books, you will like this book. And I think that's all the Who news I have.
Yep, it's going to be a long 2016.
You know what? That means we're going to have to focus on getting you guys Who comics to fill in that void.
I think that's a burden I can bear very, very well. It'll be hard, you know, getting all those free comics, but, you know, one does what one must in the service of the greater good and the powerhouse in the geek community that is Slice of Sci-Fi. I serve a greater master.
Oh, excellent.
I shall endure. I shall endure.
I shall endeavor to persevere.
That too. Oh. In addition as well.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz, for giving us a passionate appreciation and recap of Doctor Who Season 9. And, wow, the news that we won't get a Season 10 for another year. We'll live, right? We're geeks.
Yep.
That's what
There's
we do.
There's plenty of other stuff out there.
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't know about all y'all, but I am a Sherlock fan, so when it comes to waiting 2-3 years for a new season, I'm a seasoned veteran. I'll get you guys through it.
We just have to work our way through, just build up a tolerance so that we don't burst out into tears unexpectedly in public.
Yeah, we'll get you set up, yeah, with your bunker and your Doctor Who DVDs, and you know. Don't worry, I'm experienced. I'll take care of you.
Excellent. So, like I said, we will have links to the Who books and the Who comics and other stuff you can find online. But for now, that will do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have any comments or questions or anything else related to Doctor Who that you'd like to share with us and the rest of the audience, feel free to call that in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can record a message yourself and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Leave a review for us on iTunes, pretty please. You can also check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Google+, and of course, the home of all things Slice of Sci-Fi, sliceofscifi.com. Thank you, everyone, who's continuing to pledge via the Patreon page. We appreciate your support. All donations, whether through PayPal or Patreon, are welcome and going to keeping the site and the show going. That will do it. We had an extra long show today, so we're going to keep this walk out short and sweet. But, as always, we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.